Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
And so this is the Media Project, an opportunity for us to have a half hour of commentary, analysis, and maybe when we're lucky, even some insight into the media issues of the week.
I take that as a personal crack against me.
He must be feeling a little sensitive. Do you think he's missing
something
here?
Yes,
guilty?
I do.
Guilty? Yes, indeed. We're looking for insight, in search of insight. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. The guy who's feeling upset over there is Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. And, of course, Rosemary Armeo is here, director of the journalism program at the University of Albany, investigative journalist, and a short timer on this before she takes off for parts unknown.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. How could she?
You know, Rosemary's going to go off to encourage investigative reporting in foreign countries to supposedly give them insight into the U.S. model of press freedom. This comes at a moment when press freedom in the United States situation is worsening.
Sure.
Making it harder, I think, for you to make the argument that, hey, go and be like us, right?
It actually makes us a little more sympathetic to the people we talked to for years. If I worked overseas, I'd hear, oh, you're from the United States. What do you know? It's not hard for you to get information. You don't have people standing in your way to put out stories. Now we are really colleagues and comrades. And we've said for years, no. We know all about corrupt politicians and bad reception for journalism. But now everyone knows that it's a problem here.
Yeah. Now we have a president who says that the press is the enemy and who pushes that. It's terrible. I mean, you know, it really ends up meaning that we're in serious trouble. He also admires dictators.
Yes.
Right. Dictators
and those
who
dictators,
kill and
and those
imprison
dictators, as you
journalists
may remember, and then I'll be quiet, Rosemary, and you can just
good, I like that.
Keep talking. No, but really, he admires dictators, and we know that those dictators don't allow freedom of the press, and one and one makes two.
The index on censorship is a measure of this, and this was just issued by a French-based organization called Reporters Without Borders, Reporters Sans Frontières, which ranked the U.S. 43rd out of 180 nations on press freedom, and we are dropping two slots below last year.
They have been dropping for a while. Actually, Obama helped fuel that drop as well. He also was not good to whistleblowers who are the mainstay of a lot of corruption reporting. And in October, the Committee to Protect Journalists, that's a U.S.-based organization that also looks at press freedom along with danger to reporters, labeled Trump a unique danger to press freedom. And it comes at a time, government pressure is just the latest pressure. There's huge economic trouble for U.S. news outlets, and so this does not help.
So do you guys think that, and I really, I respect both of you so much. Well, I respect you a little bit. Do you guys think that the press, under attack from the president, is trying to sort of bend over a little bit to help him out, to show that they really aren't one-sided? You know, the New York Times recently hired a very conservative columnist, right?
Well, I don't know if it's conservative, but he has been portrayed, and some of his writing indicates he's a climate denier.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it the other way around. I'd say he is conservative. I think calling him a denier is a bit of a harsh judgment. Brett Stephens, who has been has been a columnist for the Wall Street Journal for years, and he is a harshly conservative voice. His point on climate change is not unlike the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, he says, yes, humans are having an impact on the climate. What he says is, we don't know how much, and it's been exaggerated by the scientists who are studying it.
So do you think the New York Times hired him to assuage conservative critics.
There are two different ways to look at that. Alan's point of view on this would be, I think I'm stating it correctly, that they're just sucking up to the right.
No, I wouldn't say that. But I do think, I mean, you know, stop trying to put words in my mouth, Rex. You always do that.
I'm just trying to help you.
Well, my words are better than yours. And when your words meet
my words...
My
words are so great. You'll be so tired of how great my words are.
When your words meet my words in my mouth...
I'm bigly annoyed with both of you. And actually, Alan, a lot of people are criticizing NPR and suggesting that they are caving and becoming more
Indeed.
And more pro-Trump because of fear that it will lose funding from the federal government.
Well,
and
you don't expect me to deny that.
There seems to be quite an emphasis on what Trump supporters are thinking and feeling these
Absolutely
days that we did
right.
not see previously.
Do
on NPR.
You not think that it's appropriate to listen to half of the American electorate who supported Donald Trump? Isn't one of the lessons of 2016 that the mainstream media, based as we are on the left and right coasts in blue states predominantly, that we didn't do a good enough job of listening, didn't hear what was going on out there?
So, Rexy, is what you're saying that no matter what happens in an election, it'll be like a pendulum, you know, go back and forth. If there's a 40% on one side, no matter how ridiculous, we should
now,
be
of sequence
to that.
Who's putting words in whose mouth here?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask what the second explanation, not Alan's explanation, for why the New York Times would hire.
I think the other explanation is that they feel as though the people who are editors at the Times, feel as though that the perspective of the right has not been as thoroughly articulated, especially because, this is interesting, their thoughtful conservative columnists have been moving to the left. You know, you look at David Brooks.
He's gotten more and
his
more.
His columns
yes.
have
George
really.
George Will is another
George
one.
Will, the wow. voice of the right for a long time. My goodness, he's just savaging Trump. You know,
I don't think it's political. I think it's economic. News outlets were always on the coast. It's not like they suddenly moved out of Kansas and Montana. But we always had money to send people in and around the country, and we don't have that anymore. And so there is a dropping off of coverage of those areas.
And here's what's ironic, though. I mean, you talk about not having money, which is really true. You know, believe me, I can talk to you about cutbacks in newsrooms. But the New York Times now has added 308,000 digital subscribers in the first quarter. Digital-only subscription revenues up 40% over the first quarter of 2016. And their CEO says, yep, it's a result. The number one factor is the Trump effect.
Without question. I mean, WAMC, where you sit today by our sufferance, Rex.
And so gratefully.
gracefully. Gratefully. Yeah. WAMC had $1 million one-day fund drive. And when the newspapers, including yours, called me up, I had one answer. It's all Trump.
There are other signs. We're seeing increased inquiries from students who are suddenly, just like after Watergate in the early 70s, are asking about journalism as a possible noble field to go into. And Rex, you and I have both seen this. I think you have too, Alan, that you go out now and speak to groups about press freedom or attacks on the First Amendment, and suddenly you've got 100 to 300 people sitting in an auditorium on a nice spring evening to listen to pundits. So that's something new, and I think Trump has a lot to do with it.
In fact, for the liberal side of things, if there is a silver lining in all of this, it's the energy that it's brought to the resistance or the opposition, which we didn't see at all previous to this.
Yes. You know, it is interesting, too. I read a piece interviewing a researcher on demonstrations, an academic who actually studies the makeup and the motivators for public demonstrations. She moved to Washington, D.C. several years ago thinking, well, this is the center of demonstrations in America, and was disappointed that there was so little going on. Now she's exhausted because there are significant demonstrations, by which she means 50,000 people or more, every week in Washington. And she says what's interesting is that these demonstrations are not just single issue people who say, well, I'm here because of abortion rights, or I'm here because of prison reform or something. These people have a multitude of issues that motivate them to step forward.
All hopeful, but let's not forget that the Gallup poll registered the lowest figures ever since they began on regard for and trust in the media. People,
well, that's not surprising. I mean, if you got a president of the United States every night on there just attacking the press, he's got the 40% base that he's always talking about. Well, he's given them their marching orders, and you know what they're going to do. Somebody polls them, they're going to say, yeah, the evil press.
The ratings did drop 6% just last year alone, so there's no question that the election had some sort of effect on disregard.
Their priorities, he says, are not my priorities and not your priorities. This is what he said in Harrisburg the other day at this great
rally.
Make America Great Again rally.
Campaign
if the media's
rally.
Job
campaign
is rally. To be honest and tell the truth, the media deserves a very, very big, fat, failing grade. And he said that we are very dishonest people.
That is the pot calling the kettle black, let me point out.
Well, no, there's something wrong with that analogy, Rosemary, if I may. The pot calling the kettle black means everybody's bad, if you think about it. But if in this case, the press is good, the president is bad when he says things like that.
The press has done plenty of things wrong. The difference is
so
that
they deserve the lowering of the approval rating?
Absolutely not. The difference is, if you let me continue, that when the press does wrong things, it corrects itself. Articles come out in reviews. There's, what, a 113-page article in New York magazine recently on everything the press did wrong and does wrong and showed itself to be doing wrong in the campaign. I don't see that happening in politics or with the president specifically.
Well, if I may, I think that you may have that wrong, Rosemary.
Do you think the politicians do self-correct?
No, I think the press doesn't really self-correct.
They're young.
I haven't finished my sentence. For goodness sake, will you just let me finish your sentence before you guys jump in
sentences.
On a bunch of rats on a garbage bag? I mean, honest to God, this is not nice of you. And you're playing on my
feeble mind. I have no desire to be nice to you, Alan.
and you're playing on my feeble mind, knowing that if you interrupt,
if I keep talking,
forget.
You'll forget. You have, haven't you?
No, I haven't.
But quick, change the subject.
So if the arrogance of the press, I mean, you get a guy, he lies, he writes an article that doesn't exist.
Who's
his name?
Jason Blair, 8 pages in the New York Times later explaining.
And that's 25 years ago. Can you give us something a little more current?
I'm so sorry.
We're talking about the coverage of the Trump campaign.
Sorry.
Who has lied?
I tried to say that what's important here is that the arrogance of the press where it exists is not over the things that they just can't defend, like Jason Blair. Mm-hmm. It is over, you know, a certain kind of arrogance. We're better than other people are. We know this stuff. But I think that they've been doing a terrible job in terms of analysis of what's really going on in Washington.
What are you talking about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm talking about. If you read the papers over the last several days, you would have thought that the repeal and repair of the so-called repair of the
replace
of the Affordable Care Act was not going to happen. Well, it is going to happen.
No, I think if you read the press, you'd see that it was very close, which is exactly what it is.
And I think that there's been thoughtful analysis of the provisions of it. Everybody's been tracking exactly what's going on. I mean, I think that actually the New York Times hiring a conservative columnist is more a response to what you're concerned about. If there's arrogance on the part of the press, they're answering it by trying to get a voice out there, an arrogant voice of the right, actually.
But it looks like they're succumbing, honestly.
Succumbing. You're taking both sides of this argument now.
That's not unusual.
It's not a side. I mean, the press needs to be very critical of this administration, as it has needed to be critical of every administration, including Barack Obama.
The Washington Post published an interactive graphic tracking false and misleading claims made by the president, summarized the first 100 days. Columbia Journalism Review analyzed the Times' front page to see. NPR annotated Trump's campaign promises, analyzed the sentiments of his tweets. I mean, this is journalism taking a look at what is going on in Washington and
yes.
And appropriately being holding them to account.
Yes, Rex, but the 40% hasn't moved.
That's not our fault?
Well, no. I'm just saying the base hasn't moved. And so when Trump says, I'm playing to my base, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, you're right. It isn't our fault, Rex, but Alan is right, is that it is our big deal problem.
Challenge.
Because we write things that are true, that are verifiable, that are buttressed with all kinds of evidence, and people don't care.
They just dismiss
it as fake news. They dismiss us as biased. And indeed, as I've said over and over, we proved ourselves biased with the editorials that came out and the columns that came out during the campaign. CJR, the Columbia Journalism Review, just came out with a look. They found 6 outlets that endorsed Donald Trump. 6 out of thousands that there are in the country. So if there's a view that we are anti-Trump, that's not arrogance or being above it all. We truly were.
The opinion pages were. And
distinction
Trump,
that readers
oh,
do not
on,
get, Rex.
Readers give it up, Rex. Give no. it up. When the New York Times does an article on the front page of the paper, it's reflective if you look real carefully, if you're as smart as I am.
Oh, please.
And you look real carefully and you say, this mirrors the editorial policy of the newspaper.
But now, wait a minute. You started this show by saying that the press is being too good by sucking up to the Trump administration. And now
I didn't
you're
say
saying
good.
I'm too nice to him.
Anything but good. I mean, the last thing you want to do is suck up to these guys who admire dictators and their closing down of their press and the rest of it by seeming to succumb and bringing on advocates of that point of view.
But now you're upset that the news articles, you say, reflect the anti-Trump position of the opinion page. So if you were the editor of the New York Times, you would not have that kind of reporting in your paper that holds Trump to account.
Look, Rex.
Which part has been false?
Rex, I'm a political scientist. You're not. I study what is, not what should be. I mean, the fact is, that's what I'm studying. And we know what has happened here. So one and one makes two, and I know it. Look, I want to...
Wait, what about the possibility that the news is correct and it's negative because what he's doing is negative, which does indeed reflect negative thoughts on the editorial page?
Well, you got me there.
Well,
okay. There you go.
Okay, well, I want to tell you guys, because you're very young, a story. There was once...
No. Are we going to be on Fire Island?
Not on Fire Island.
Oh, not that
However,
old story.
However, on 125th Street, which is Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard now, Adam Clayton Powell got into trouble. He was a congressman. And he said some terrible stuff about one of Mayor Wagner's people and got sued and he wouldn't pay. So he went to Bimini and he stayed there, even while he was a congressman. They kept reelecting him. Rosemary, you look bored. I know history may bore you.
Okay.
But at some point, the Amsterdam News, the newspaper, you know, of record up in Harlem, printed a headline which I will never forget. It said, "Ho-hum, they're after Adam again." Well, you see, I mean... People believe what they want to believe in each of these cases, and that 40%, that base, is not going to be changed by what happens.
Hey, I mean, I think we do have a major problem reflected in that credibility rating that Rosemary referred to, that people don't trust the media. I mean, we have fallen so far, and I don't know how to deal with that, frankly, because our job is to tell the truth, and the truth is not a balance between one side and the other.
Right.
The president needs to be held to account for what he says that isn't true.
We're dealing with the reality. Star who knows how to use the media, some of the media, to his own advantage. There was a fascinating report by a mic expert. And if you look at the mic that was used in the debate, remember when Trump kept complaining that his mic didn't work? It was actually because he and Hillary had the same one, but Hillary is so much shorter that she spoke directly, as I am now, into the microphone, whereas he towered many inches above. So his voice was not as forceful and powerful. And now if you look at him, he has ordered, and there was a meeting in the White House to determine this. He's talked more about this than China, apparently, and bought a big, giant microphone. In fact, photographers complain about it because it's a big blob on his chest when they take photos.
Covers up even that long red tie.
It increases his voice 4 times normal.
Wow.
So he comes off as forceful and powerful and louder than anybody else in the room. We are dealing with a media genius.
That's very interesting.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
You agree with it?
Yeah.
I agree that he's a media genius.
And a marketing. He knows about branding. He knows about painting someone with a nickname that then becomes their actual name. And he knows that people have short memories. So all the lies he told in the past that the New York Times is carefully logging and we are recalling it over and over again, they've forgotten about it. It's like, move on. Let's go to the next thing.
And the problem is when you try to hold him to account, was demonstrated when John Dickerson of CBS News was in the Oval Office and asked him about the point that he tweeted, "Obama had my wires tapped," and claimed that Obama was either sick or I can't remember his other thing. But Trump said, "I think our side's been proven very strongly and everybody's talking about it. And frankly, it should be discussed and we should find out what the hell is going on." And then Dickerson pressed him to say, "Well, wait a minute. There's no justification for this. Nobody has sided with you." He walked away from the interview.
And
ended
Colbert,
the interview
did Colbert
News.
Get angry about this?
Yeah, Colbert talked about it and said, I'm going to say to the president what my esteemed news colleague could not because I'm not a journalist. However, in doing that, it was really hysterically funny. He used a very, very naughty word.
Having to do with an aperture from the male body, didn't
correct.
It?
Correct. Yeah. And where and how that was being used
by Trump.
With Putin.
Kind of astonishing stuff coming.
I know. I asked Joe if we could use the word on radio. He said probably not.
Colbert has left all the way to the ratings check. You know, this has been great for him.
What's interesting, though, with Trump supporters, it's not. Trump supporters will say the press was being unfair. The president was right to shut down the interview. How dare John Dickerson ask him to really, to back up what he claimed, which has no substantiation according to the intelligence agencies.
They didn't even do that. The social media attack was against the use of profanity, and they're calling for a boycott on the sponsors of Colbert's show. And it's serious enough that he did say, well, you know, I stand by the sentiment, but I could have used better
this
language.
From the president of the United States, who talked about grabbing women by their
you-know-what. Yes, I know.
Yeah, you're right. Let's all be sympathetic
about
language.
But Colbert was, however, on national television, smack in front of a camera, and the president thought his words were hidden and secret and never would come out. There's a difference.
Yeah. I think that's...
There's always a difference.
I think Colbert was didn't have to use the bad word. It was an extremely funny monologue. He could have made his point in a less profane way and not opened himself up. You have to remember that if you're going to attack this president, 40% of the country is coming strongly to his defense.
Yeah, which is interesting because when you take the O'Reilly case and, you know, all the rest of that stuff, when the side, I think it's fair to say, you're on...
The women,
Right, that's why I said it's fair to say that. Got so angry, those guys were kicked off the air. Ailes and, you know.
Yeah, they got how many millions of dollars? They weren't exactly, you know, kicked in,
but they
in
didn't,
the teeth, Alan.
But
they made out all right.
But O'Reilly didn't like it. No matter how much money he got, he didn't like it.
Yeah, he doesn't like being called to account and being called wrong.
But he wasn't kicked off the air for something he said. He was kicked off the air for gross actions that cost his company millions and millions of dollars. Let's not think that Rupert Murdoch took O'Reilly out because of behavior. He took him out because he was expensive. He was costing him money in settlements.
He wasn't costing him money now. He was costing Rex what was going to cost them because they had this big problem overseas where they want to buy, DirecTV? Is that
Sky TV.
Sky TV,
They have to be. The European Union has some strict rules. And once before, their attempt to buy into Sky was thwarted by the phone hacking scandal, also caused by Murdoch Properties in UK. So, yeah, I think the Murdoch boys are business-wise, and they're taking the action they have to. It was a business decision to get rid of. Now three top officials at Fox News have gone out the door.
Well, there you go.
Gotten the axe.
So just to summarize, how do you cover a president? The president of CNN, Jeff Zucker, who actually used to be the president of NBC, and he made Donald Trump. He's the guy who gave Donald Trump this platform.
Trump would say, I made him.
Yeah, well, it could be. But now you have the president leading rallies where he gets the crowd to chant CNN sucks and that kind of thing. Jeff Zucker says that MSNBC...
I'm offended by the word sucks.
...has become the opposition. Yeah, I am too. I don't usually use it, but it's being used in this context.
I'm not offended by you. It was a little play on what we had just been talking about who takes offense at what.
Jeff Zucker says that CNN is seeking the truth, that MSNBC has become the opposition, and he calls Fox News state-run TV. So the question is, how do you pursue journalism at a time when truth-telling is suspect and makes you unpopular with 40% of the population?
What you do is you just do it. You do what's right. You've said it many times in a rather pompous way, Rex. You know, you just do what's right and let the chips fall where they may.
Well, I think that's true. By the way, for those of you who listen to this program, what we call live on tape, basically at the time that it's intended. Now, I know that we send this program around to other places in the country, and so people sometimes play it a week late. But for those of you in New York's capital region, you can come to watch us live. Yes, you can. Next week, as we speak, at the Hearst Media Center, which is in the Times Union building in Colony. And if you want to do that, you can go to timesunion.com. The way to do it is to call
5-4-5-4-7-9. Isn't that nice?
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Can I do a commercial,
of
too?
Why, sure.
Okay, because the Museum for Political Corruption.
The Museum for Political Corruption. How cool is that?
Which has several journalists on its board, including myself and my colleague Thomas Bass at UAlbany, have instituted a new award for investigative reporting specifically on corruption. It's called the Nellie Bly Award. You probably know her from The Woman Who Went Around the World in 80 Days. Very pioneering woman journalist. And so this award for the first time is going out to Suzanne Craig of the New York Times. And our listeners may remember her. She's the one who suddenly in her mailbox one day found some tax returns, the only tax returns we've seen for Donald Trump. They indicate he didn't pay too much.
Yeah. That is not actually a typical investigative reporting technique to have stuff wind up in your mailbox. She's a terrific investigative reporter.
Sure, not arrogant at all, and if people who know her will love journalism.
Are you calling me arrogant?
We called a lot of journalists arrogant, but I don't know that just doing your work is enough. When people get to know what journalists really do, then they tend to like what they do better.
Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Get that payoff, what a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.